offspring of Eve and the serpent, Eve representing humanity, the serpent Satan, and perhaps as a bioplasma substance through which the consciousness of the Prince of Darkness works, mutating and usurping the physical body of Eve. Perhaps this is the origin of Jewry, and they are an ideoplasmation of the Prince of Darkness's illusory dreaming, as Miguel Serrano alludes to. The Jewish female then serves as a vector for the spread of the substance, which in turn affects others in the same way, transforming them into robots of the demiurge in Serrano's terms. Other lower kingdoms of life such as the Insectal are present, and to a greater degree than that of the more complex systems of the human or animal kingdom. The presence of greenish-yellow slime in Carpenter's earlier movie Season of the Witch further underscores that this was probably a revelation of the method. In this film, the typical Jewish tactic of inversion is put forth, with the arch-villain being an Irishman who is an occultist attempting to perform a ritual sacrifice of children on Halloween or Samhain. He utilizes robotic creatures who he makes in his toy manufacturing company, who, when killed, secrete this greenish-yellow algae-like substance. These robots are also accompanied by insects who, as in the Prince of Darkness, are an ever-present phenomenon. In the Halloween film, these automata are activated by a mysterious force derived from pieces of Stonehenge which the pagan has taken from its resting place and relocated to his toy factory. He has attached silver shamrock brand icons to his manufactured Halloween masks, which have a small granule of the rock of Stonehenge and a microchip inside, and which, when activated by the commercial he runs viewed by the children wearing the mask, causes this energy to discharge as electrical fire of the witch power into them, killing them. Again, insects are ever present and come out of the dead once this gruesome process has been brought to its final stage of sacrifice. Perhaps the mycoplasma of the automata human cyborgs, the witch power and insects function in some synergistic mode, being all related, as in the Prince of Darkness, as occult forces domineering over and organizing the lower kingdoms of life. The depiction of a parasite growing into its host, or an outright murderous assault against the human, all to human. The demiurge at work in his assault against the pure. In the Prince of Darkness, the woman who is selected as the female vessel who will bring into the world, into manifestation, the Prince of Darkness, happens to be a blonde woman. This cursing of the Gentiles on the part of the probable Jew John Carpenter, the director of the film, may nonetheless have at least some intelligibility in showing that higher, pure beings like those most akin to the Hyperborean Diviers, the Aryan race, are more susceptible of a greater spread and influence of higher forces than the more hybridized stock such as the Jews. In the movie, Christ is referred to as white and as having come to the earth to save mankind from the Antichrist. The blonde woman is portrayed as having an occult symbol reminiscent of a bruise on her right arm near the elbow, which has a shape similar to an Egyptian ankh and equal armed cross combined. Perhaps this is a connotation to the initiates of certain bloodlines who can serve as a better vehicle for higher entities, whose greater complexity through sympathetic magic attracts them or enables them to operate at a higher level of power. The demonization of Aryans is present here, though it could be viewed as complimentary more than a backhanded insult, and perhaps expresses the fear Jewry has for the Aryan race, as does also Season of the Witch, with the Irish arch-villain having a diabolically evil nature, foreign into the Judeo-Christian moralizing of the protagonists and indeed perhaps Carpenter himself, albeit inadvertently on the part of the latter. The connection between these episodes and the Antichrist can also be seen in the case of Nietzsche. The philosopher who wrote the Antichrist was alleged to have died of pneumonia. This leads one to question whether the pneumonia he contracted was not a result of this mycoplasma or unicellular algae, which in similar fashion took over his body and caused him to channel the Antichrist, Ecce Homo and the Case Against Wagner, the last works he completed on before his death. Perhaps, under the influence of his Jewish friends Lou Andreas Salome, Paul Rhee and Peter Gast, as well as his probable Masonic affiliation, led to his becoming body snatched or usurped by this substance and his writing works which expressed the demiurge's will to power, ushering in the new eon. This was perhaps followed up by Crowley and the Book of the Law only a short time later, which might have been a continuation of this process of manifestation. In the movie The Invasion of the Body Snatchers, plant-like spores take over the earth and the bodies of the human all-to-human through creating clones of their physical forms and, through some form of sympathetic magic or quantum entanglement, usurping their consciousness and transforming it into their clones which body snatch the soul of their prey, enabling these entities to work through them and this through their spore-like medium, as the initial cause of their parasitical takeover. This allusion to plant life is further revealed in the movie from the same period The Thing from Another World, in which a plant-like alien lands in Antarctica and can only be defeated through electricity which destroys its otherwise indestructible plant-like body, which can reassemble itself if shot with bullets. It had been attempting to replicate itself in a similar way to the invasion of the body snatchers. John Wyndham's book The Day of the Triffids shows the same motif with plants taking over the earth through a parasitical spread of their spore. John Carpenter's representation of the movie The Thing from Another World in his The Thing also takes place in Antarctica, with the bodies of the researchers in Antarctica being taken over and modified by an entity which initially works through smaller organic life and seeks expansion and conquest through the medium of physically larger organisms. Antarctica has been off-limits for many years largely owing to the intervention of the National Socialist Miguel Serrano, and perhaps is a region of the Earth playing host to an entity or entities of this sort, or at least had been prior to the migration there of the Reichsdeutsche, the National Socialists who established Neuschwabenland, their base of operations. Perhaps, it might be speculated, that the entity or entities dwelling there are of a beneficent nature only portrayed in a negative and distorted way by Jewish Hollywood legend. These legends being themselves perhaps ideoplasms of the demiurge, his mundane robots and their movie magic. Perhaps one might speculate further and draw connection between the comet which entered into the solar system millennia ago, now called Planet Venus, and these entities. The parallel between the color green often associated with Venus and this ideoplasmation of mycoplasma or unicellular algae and its color is suggestive. The children's novel by the J.R.L. Stein, Monster Blood, in four parts as part of his Goosebumps series, presents the green ectoplasmic medium of conscious intelligence as having the properties of growth and the capacity to hypertrophy organic life, causing the growth of the children who play with the monster blood as well as other smaller creatures, forming a symbiotic relationship to them, not one in any way benevolent however but parasitical and mutative, serving its own ends, destroying human life if it cannot be taken over. In the Marvel Comics series Venom by the Jew Stan Lee, a black goo takes over a blonde-haired, blue-eyed man who is transformed when it exerts its influence over him, into a violently aggressive being who serves as the instrument of the substance and who is the nemesis of the intellectual anti-hero Jew Peter Parker, aka Spider-Man. Venom is the golem of the dark forces, just as is the blonde female in The Prince of Darkness serving the will of their master. Yet, given that jury always play this role, it actually amounts to another inversion and cursing of the Gentiles on the part of the Jewish creators, possibly even amounting to a predictive programming through which is revealed jury's intention, as the intention of the Prince of Darkness, to transform the Aryan race, those who possess pure blood, into golem to serve their master. Indeed, the observable facts point to jury in the role of golem. The chemtrails routinely being spread over the world, one might speculate, do not just serve the exclusive purpose of terraforming the world for the takeover of entities through modifying the atmosphere. Rather, their primary function may very well be the creation of the symbiont, distributing heavy metal nanoparticulate and self-replicating bacterial mycoplasma that can be absorbed into the bodies of the human all-to-human and which can then take over their bodies in an aggressively symbiotic usurpation of the autonomy of their soul. The black goo portrayed in Venom perhaps is a symbiotic amalgam of the mineral kingdom and the organismal or plant kingdom, which are fused together to serve as a substance that can invade and take over a host without being neutralized through organic processes such as stomach acid or other organic defense mechanisms. The takeover by this conscious substance creates through quantum entanglement at higher dimensions a hive mind through which all of the subordinate and relatively independent symbionts can communicate with one another and work collectively toward their his goal, which is presumably the vampirization of everything into itself, the souls of all relatively independent organisms spanning all kingdoms of life, mineral, plant, organismal and beyond. This is the will to power of the demiurge and manifests itself in the political system of communitarianism, the collectivized hive mind of the Prince of Darkness ruling over his cybernetic robots on the ant farm of Zion. The connection between this hive mind, its political embodiment and the theology of pantheistic naturalism is clear. Everything must be equalized and placed on the same wavelength of vibration. No independence is permitted, and all of that which seeks, through its own will, autonomy, is subject to destruction. Join us or die. The hymn to Pan of Aleister Crowley echoes here throughout the ages to the present, from ancient Lemuria, also named after Pan, to the shtetls dotting the body of Gaia as so many sarcomas, to the cities, themselves tumors of the human altar human, which further pollute Gaia and terraform the atmosphere for the enslavement of the world. All are one, merging with and serving the one, the demiurge. The robots of the demiurge, jury, facilitate the role of causation of all sentient life and could not help but do so, as they are mere instruments of his will. They cause the chemtrails to be dispersed and the installation of the 5G death grid. The mutations of organic life induced by the black goo in conjunction with the deadly organ emanating from cell towers and smart meters which function synergistically to achieve this organic mutation, are enabling the takeover of entities from higher dimensions. Like the motto of Monster, energy drink, monster inside, we are being mutated by the black magicians and their hierarchy to serve as their Frankenstein's monster. We already have a monster inside, in the form of demiurgic venom, and like the movie Alien, we are incubating an entity which seeks to take over our very souls. An attack on a higher consciousness is being undergone at all times, inducing fear, lust, pain, hate, aggression, stupidity and apathy, and detaching us from the nucleus of our being, disintegrating our bodies and souls through innovation and creating chaos and dysfunctionality within. And all of the children are insane, as Jim Morrison prophetically warned before his assassination. The nanoparticles in our pineal gland and blood are sabotaging the higher functioning of our body, creating a separation from our souls, even as the entity takes over, displacing us. Though this may cause some to despair, that would be to associate ourselves with our bodies and to simply acquiesce to our transhumanization, being transformed into what Tim Rifot called a Z.O.N. a Cambian or body snatched vessel of an alien will. However, time appears to be short for the Prince of Darkness. The solar system is traveling closer to the galactic center, and the emanations of the Black Sun, the Christ ray, are elevating our vibration even as the dark forces are moving rapidly forward, in desperation of losing their grip on power and the soul food that it gives them to live their parasitical lives serving the demiurge. A return to Hyperborea awaits, and only those who live in time and do not walk the path of transcendence need concern themselves with their own finitude. Those who seek and give priority to success and achievement in the physical world and live a life amidst the ruins of the demiurge and his venom have forsaken the treasures in heaven, which are attainable only by those whose focal point of consciousness is directed toward the higher planes, they who dwell in eternity and thereby rest their souls from the grip of the monster and his ideoplasmations. These latter will perish with him, and the pure will resurrect upon a new earth in the new golden age as Balder in Aquarius. Space Invaders pop culture reveals the strategy of the enemy. It is designed with at least two purposes in mind: 1, a revelation of the method, and 2, the placing of a double bind on the broad masses. According to the dark forces who control the planet, their malevolent and violent action against their captive slaves is justified if and only if they give their captive a choice, either to oppose them or to submit to their enslavement and gradual disintegration of their soul through the vampirization of their slave master overlords. This choice comes in the form of a restriction of the options of the captive, an imposition of their intended master's will upon them to force their captives to make a decision with respect to the options the dark forces impose upon them. The set of options usually entails choosing between the lesser of two or more evils, the options always being overall detrimental and causing loss, harm or injury to the decision maker, though conferring an apparent benefit. The false gifts the vampire overlords claim to offer their subordinates are poisoned apples whose sweetness makes their poison more readily accepted. The mode in which these choices are offered is usually covert and indirect and might be called a simulacral mode of communication, substituting a counterfeit, token or distorted form or representation of the thing actually offered, which appears good or necessary but is in reality necessarily bad and unnecessary. This false gift or choice offered the captive slave or still free mark placed into the crosshairs of the vampire overlords is a hook of incentive offered to the mark, which is a disguised appearance concealing the harm underneath or within it. It is always a choice that constitutes bait, a worm or a hook the vampires cast out before their fish to snare them and to absorb their energy, be the form of energy, money, tangible, material goods or the pain, suffering, defilement or in general loss, harm or injury the mark would incur in taking the bait. Hence the choice offered is made to initiate a contract with the mark or dupe and to inveigle him and or others to suffer a loss that feeds the vampire their bioenergy. The choice of the decision violently imposed through covert means upon their marks are revealed in the fine print of the contract. This fine print is concealed behind the simulacral form of the offer of the gift or choice and is the actual substance of the contract. It is usually the hidden meaning that the contract comes in, the form of symbol or tone or other simulacra which obscure or conceal to those not aware of the meaning of the symbolism the fine print actual form of the contract. The movie They Live By the Jewish Reptilian Hybrid John Carpenter from 1988 reveals this method in a more crude manner, under the false appearance of beguiling advertisements are the actual meaning of these ads which constitute commands to act in certain ways or forbear from certain forms of action. According to the logic of these creatures to reveal to their mark what they intend to do before doing it discharges their karma for their crimes, washes away their sins or the blood from their hands. Though the form of communication be unintelligible to their mark according to the dark force's twisted logic, it is adequate as an exculpatory act to get off the hook for their karma and moreover transfer their karma or sin onto their mark, as the latter was given a choice to oppose their imposition and failed to do so, which amounts to an acquiescence to the contract. In failing to choose the lesser of the two or more evils of the restricted set of choices the dark forces impose upon their marks, the marks are blameworthy and not the dark forces who initiated and imposed the unilateral contract upon their victims. Any involvement with and failure to oppose the dark forces according to their logic constitutes agreement to enter into a contract with them. As Bram Stoker allegorized in his novel Dracula, to allow the vampire to enter into one's place is to allow the vampire to drink one's blood, more literally to drain one or his company, family or race of their bioenergy through this form of unilateral contractual agreement. Blaming the victim for the harm caused the victim by the dark forces is the latter's attempt to impose a double bind upon their marks, cursing them once for entering into the contract with the inevitable negative consequences of loss, harm or injury, and doubly so for not opposing the contract and failing to recognize that the choices offered as terms of this contract were not necessary but simply optional or a choice that could be rejected even though with potentially negative consequences. The metaphor of a bully grabbing one's fists and beating their captive with them applies in this double-bind conception. Only it is typically a proxy who is paid to bully others who the Jews employ, being as they are cowardly and risk-averse as well as wanting to transfer their sins onto the bully as a scapegoat. On a grander scale, the police and military forces constitute the kosher-approved bullies the Jewish oligarchy unleashes on those they hate while simultaneously making a pretense of condemning militarism and police brutality, the after creating damage to another nation, coming in to interfere after the damage was done to help the victim by giving them a false gift of whatever form. The foregoing constituted a basic encapsulation of the ethics of the dark forces, which amounts to a black magic working imposed upon others with violence of a voiceless and covert form of manifestation. It applies in their sphere of entitata culta, which serves as their karmic clearing movie house or theater of the real, which reveals to the population what the dark forces are intending to do to them while representing it as mere entertainment. Thus the watching of movies not only programs the minds of the zombified masses to operate according to how they are programmed but serves as a contract itself. The substance or subject matter of the contract entails a presentation of the heretofore concealed and now revealed information the dark forces wish to bring out, and by giving informed consent to the audience this justifies them, according to their logic, in imposing the particular subject matter upon the audience in real life. Thus the hyper-reality of fiction serves as a contract whose consumption justifies the imposition of the actual meaning or act covertly revealed in fictional form. The movies of Jewish Hollywood, which revealed the invasion of Earth by extraterrestrial life, are designed as a contractual offer to consent to such an invasion. The particular form of aliens presented in these movies are of a variety of species and their motives sometimes malevolent, sometimes benevolent, as a means of creating confusion in the goyim and shifting attention from who actually the aliens are and what their intentions are, making the variety of aliens appear to be mere vain imaginings of the minds of eccentric scriptwriters and Hollywood producers. Regardless of the variety of alien, there are two themes that have a constant presence throughout film industry history. 1. There exist reptiloid aliens, and 2. They seek to invade Earth, and 3. Have hostile intent in relation to the population. These themes are the basic template of world history and explain, albeit in distorted forms of presentation in the movies of Jewish Hollywood, the cosmic war between the Aryan race and these reptilian creatures. The inversion of Hollywood being a typical act of Jewish black magic, the reptilians are either portrayed as good, in a favorable light and bound up with Jewish actors who play the role of a messianic protagonist figure, or the reptilians are portrayed as bad and affiliated with Nazis. The reality, should one wish to reverse engineer the distortion of Jewish Hollywood, is the contrary, though not necessarily the opposite, of Jewish Hollywood. One can conclude that the reptilians are bad or malevolent and when associated with Nazis in a negative light, though the behavior of the Hollywood Nazis is evil and bad and that of the dark forces portrayed as good, hence constituting an inversion of reality and simulacrum behind which the hidden hand conceals itself. Perhaps there exist good reptilians that have rebelled against their hive just as there exist good Jews. Or perhaps that is a myth of Jewish Hollywood itself. The obscurantism of the culture distorter is deliberately ambiguous, designed to obfuscate and drag red herrings across their path to shift the consciousness away from themselves and to portray themselves if known or caught in a half-light of saving grace that they might someday convert to Christ or become like the rest of the goyim and cast aside their old ways of transgression and ethnocentric fanaticism. The concealed reality, however, is that, even if such exceptions to the rule exist, the rule is the rule and Jewish and by extension reptilian behavior is a constant and malevolent, existential threat to all sentient life on Gaia. The themes presented in Jewish Hollywood depicting reptilians as a malevolent force is a revelation of the method. The movies of quasi-reptilian or reptilian creatures released by Jewish Hollywood are a revelation of the method, and are attempts to discharge their karma, curse their hated foe the Aryan race, and predictably program the mass mind to receive these alien overlords. The theme of space invasion or the exploration of space and discovery of aliens of a malevolent kind entails reptilians or quasi-reptilians in this role of an aggressive colonist of Gaia and her denizens or as simply an antagonist towards the Aryan race. In the cartoon Space Ghost from the 1960s, created by the Jewish spin doctors William Hanna and Joseph Barber, in the episode The Lizard Slavers, a cadre of reptilian aliens whose symbol is a yellow triangle on a black uniform are depicted as running an intergalactic slave ring. The lizard's uniforms and logo perhaps signify the demiurge whose symbol is the masculine upward-pointing triangle signifying the akasa or element of masculine positive force and yellow possibly connoting intellect as well as electricity, the current of electrical fire traveling along the neural networks of the biocomputer brain as electrical impulses and, as within so without, the divine or demonic mind of the demiurge in his cosmic will to power, the will of the violator of the absolute. In this TV series the lizard slavers target humans and store them in underground facilities, actually dwelling within the crust of the planet they inhabit. In the Super Mario Bros. Movie the Mario Brothers are average everyday mundanes living within their daily grind world of the Matrix and must become who they are, Aryan supermen who combat the invasion of King Koopa, a reptilian alien and his legions. In both this movie and its video game predecessor, the profane or mundane unenlightened figure of Mario the Plumber has his girlfriend, a blue-eyed blonde-haired Princess Toadstool, abducted by King Koopa. This could be a connotation of the fall of man and loss of the first estate of higher consciousness through involution of the Aryan Hyperboreans with the sacred feminine of higher intuition stolen by the lower state of beast consciousness, which took over the higher functions of the consciousness through mixture with the anthropoids during primordial times. The way back for Mario, the fallen mundane, to become Superman and regain his first estate, become a fully integrated soul who recovers the sacred feminine, is through consuming the mushroom and acquiring superpowers. Perhaps the mushroom represents the phallic principle integrated into his consciousness, his lower drives transmuted into higher consciousness. Regardless, the theme of this Japanese video game franchise clearly reveals a reptilian theme and probably has more than one layer of interpretation. Perhaps, as Dual Seed Line Identity has it, the fall of man occurred and was subsequently followed by the presence of Cain, the Wicked One, who interbred with the Aryan Eve, creating Esau. Cain perhaps, or the serpent, in the paradisiacal Garden of Eden may represent the reptilians as a synecdoche, the part representing the whole. Yet further movies with similar reptilian themes are that of Conan the Barbarian, in which James Earl Jones plays Thulsa Doom, a Negro priest king who lived in the southern regions of the earth and who transforms into a giant serpent which Conan must slay to liberate the population from its black magic hypnotic influence. The hypnosis employed by Jury and presumably their reptilian overlords is a black magic method of influencing the consciousness of their would-be slaves. The clandestine and surreptitious nature of Jury is reptilian by definition and probably derives from that extraterrestrial group of reptilians, their creators via genetic engineering. Their cold-bloodedness and calculating demiurgic mind with its emotionless rationalism, a purely analytical and logical control freakishness, is the psychological manifestation of their demiurge deity through his agents and probably, the writer ventures to speculate, bound up with this violent father god figure. The movie Alien, starring the Jewess Sigourney Weaver, is yet another alien franchise, only in it the aliens are of a more insectal appearing form, which is represented to a degree in other films such as Starship Troopers, where insect-like aliens war with humans. In Alien, the manner in which the aliens perpetuate themselves as a species is through, very similar to a reptile, depositing an egg, only in the body of a human as their vessel. According to the book by Susan B. Reed, the Body Snatchers, reptilians, being of a transdimensional nature, have the capacity to take over the bodies of the human, all too human, and to impel and compel them to act according to the will of the reptilian, in effect being taken over or body snatched by these creatures. The movie from the 50s, Invasion of the Body Snatchers, reveals plant-like creatures, pods, who create a body double of those they take over, and the body double becomes endowed with the soul of the creature, who then does away with the original party, stealing their blood or genetics to replicate itself and supplant the original body, only being one devoid of emotion and having a plant-like quality of simply growing and surviving without any will or emotion. Reptilians are notoriously cold-blooded in their behavior, and consciousness is readily observed in the behavior of Jury with his cold-blooded ruthlessness and calculating, devious, subterranean modality of consciousness. Perhaps there is some form of connection between them and the plant-like beings, also revealed in fictional form in the novel The Day of the Triffids by John Wyndham and in the movie G.I. Joe, the animated movie in which latter spores are to be released over the earth to kill off humanity so a reptilian race of subterranean beings can reconquer the earth. The movie The Thing from Another World, released in the 50s, depicts a creature of a plant-like quality entering onto the earth and taking over the bodies of its captives, being only able to be destroyed by electricity, the same directed energy used to destroy the spores in the G.I. Joe movie by the broadcast energy transmit device. The Thing, a remake of the original 50s movie by John Carpenter, shows a similar alien theme of hostile takeover, with an alien life force taking over the bodies of its captives and warping and using them as the vehicle of its will to vampirically take over the earth. Again, it can only be destroyed by electricity. Sigourney Weaver again is presented in a revelation of the method of Jewish Hollywood in the short film Raccoon, which explicitly depicts an alien invasion of Earth by reptilian beings who enslave and consume the human, all too human, and are unable to exist on the Earth through the increase of carbon dioxide and carbon monoxide emitted from the factories run by the human, all too human. The connection between Jewry and the reptilians can be read between the lines in many other venues of pop culture. The figure of Gollum in Tolkien's Lord of the Rings, obsessed by the power of Sauron and is used as an instrument of the Dark Lord to take from the hobbits the Ring of Power, connotative perhaps of the higher consciousness or Graal of Aryan divine blood, perhaps subtly connoting the vampirization agenda of Jewry and their reptilian overlords. The figure of a reptile in the video game franchise Mortal Kombat is a human reptilian shapeshifter who, in the franchise story, is a servant of Shao Kahn, the ruler of Outworld, the Dark Forces, as depicted in an inverted form by the writers of the story, who depict the characters of Cabal, a good Jew with a sinister past, Sub-Zero, a Chinese member of a secret society, and other figures who are the servitors of the reptilians in real life as the saviors and defenders of Earth, an inversion of their actual roles. In the novel by Edgar Rice Burroughs At the Earth Score of his Pellucidar series, the protagonist enters the hollow Earth through a drill machine from the surface and discovers a race of Aryan humans who are mute and lacking any education and who are kept as food stock for a group of reptilians called the Mahars. Mahar is a Jewish surname. These reptilians consume the bodies of the human cattle, and the protagonist attempts to save them, conscripting the more barbarous creatures of the Hollow Earth to assist him, an allegory of the Aryan race leading the non-whites to combat the reptilian horde which enslaves the Earth and to liberate all. A figure whose attributes are of a quasi-Neanderthal variety called Ducky the Sly One sells out the human, all too human, and sides with the reptilians owing to the female human Diane the Beautiful being attracted to the protagonist and not him. The parallel between the characters of Reptile in Mortal Kombat, Ducky the Sly One and Gollum, is clear in their roles of servitor or minion of the Dark Forces. The cannibalism of the reptilians is a practice they are alleged to engage in, and explains not only the less common discoveries or information leaks of conspiracy theorists regarding such events as Pizzagate and others related to Fritz Springmeier's books, Id and Blonde-Haired Children of Nordic Bloodlines, the descendants of the Hyperborean Diviers. Blood drinking, a coarser form of energy vampirism, is readily apparent in pop culture in the character of vampires and is almost certainly a practice that Jewry involves themselves in. How else, for example, can one explain the alleged necessity of blood banks in hospitals? Surely no blood transfusions would be needed on such a large scale other than to serve the Jews as a life source which they can absorb into themselves, the physical, liquid gaseous form of the life force of their slaves. Cannibalism is not as readily observable but almost certainly occurs as the abduction of people who go missing reveals, though it would itself be an inappropriate term as Jewry are a hybrid species and thus their consumption of humans wouldn't qualify as cannibalism by definition, as cannibalism implies same species consumption. The consumption of things declared illegal, such as animal organs from farms, is almost a certainty with Jewry, who has a relationship to their Christian farmer slaves who do their dirty work of animal husbandry for them. The Jewish TV show V, which originated in the 80s and which was re-presented recently, depicts a coterie of reptilian aliens who infiltrate planet Earth and have a humanoid appearance which they have shape-shifted into. David Icke in some of his presentations refers to the matrix in which we are situated as a hologram. His disinformation presentations are partial truths which lead astray the truth seeker toward the party line of Zion and the Dark Forces. These creatures are depicted as shape-shifting entities, and the chameleon-like nature of the illusion makers of the matrix, the Jews, is telling. Their acting ability and capacity to adopt different personae as means of ingratiating themselves with their hosts being a modus operandi reminiscent of the Thing. The attempt on the part of Jewry to interbreed with the locals further reveals their shape-shifting character, who, like the Thing, take on the appearance of their host to imperceptibly dissolve into the median of their host's blood while absorbing into themselves as much as possible in their characteristically vampiric way. We are living in a matrix of illusion, and yet it is no computer-generated hologram as Icke contends, but simply a certain frequency of vibration manipulated and distorted by the illusion makers to keep us enslaved the more readily to feed off our souls. Other disinformation agents such as the Jews Stuart Swerdlower and Len Carsten have taken up Icke's theme and represented his disinformation distortion, portraying the Draco reptilians as affiliated with the Nazis amongst other implicitly slanderous claims against whites. Stuart Swerdlov derived from a Soviet commissar officer who a city was named after under the communist regime, Sverdlovsk. His Jewish roots and connection to high-level cabal operatives reveals prima facie his untrustworthiness. The classic disinformation trope of shifting attention away from the Jews towards Nazis as a scapegoat is present in all theorists who attempt to introduce these theories related to reptilians and their malevolent intent. The book of Arthur C. Clarke Childhood's End further underscores this demonization of whites and attempts to reveal their intended genocide as a revelation of the method. Zachariah Sitchin and Eric von Daniken also are disinformation agents whose intention is to propound an anthropogenic theory about the common origin of mankind. Mankind, they contend, along with Icke and his followers, was simply created to mine gold, contrary to the real meaning and historical purpose of the origin of the diversity of bipedal species currently extant on Gaia. This origin will be gone into in the next section. With respect to the reptilian connection with Jews, the hybrid character of Jewry is readily apparent in their anatomical and behavioral features by which they can be recognized and identified. The anatomical features of Jewry are telling of their reptilian origins: slanted eyes, wide mouth, weak chin, wide jaw, receding forehead, ear lobes attached to jawline, hooked nose with wide nostrils, elongated torso relative to limb length, pasty and strange colored skin, strange odor, frizzy and strange hair often sparse around the face, beady eyes with a hypnotic quality. Behaviorally, they also reveal parallels to reptilians: cunning and possessed of a cold-bloodedness, emotionless and less play-acting, able to change channels in their mood states at the press of a button, paradoxically erratic in their emotions and when confronted or exposed full of aggressive violence similar to their reptilian masters and demiurge deity. Hedonistic and, outside of their coldly rational consciousness, given to low-minded sensual indulgence, a vacillation between the reptilian brain of lower cerebral functionality and the cerebral cortex overlay without any holistic-mindedness. The low-minded propensities of Jewry are readily apparent in their mammonistic mind, greedy and rapacious, and this counterbalanced with their calculating cunning of reason operating at its usual subterranean level. All traits bespeak a reptile whose actions and behavior all relate purely to survivalistic inclination, of a worldly sort, restricted to the phenomenal plane and to the perpetuation of the purely perishable, the telluric. The space invaders, the reptilians, have been documented throughout history in all areas of the globe and have been depicted as having a relatively similar set of anatomical features, depicted in similar scenes of human all too human sacrifice and the consumption of and overlordship over their captives. What their probable origins, the history of this world and what its ultimate destiny will be discussed in the next section. The fate of the Jews. The question has been posed in many forms by several philosophers and theoreticians: what will be the fate of the Jews? What is the solution to the Jewish question? The answer has been best explicated in Julius A. Voller's Three Aspects of the Jewish Problem, in which he considers the alternatives and how best to deal with the Jewish pest as a final solution. The answer that A. Voller came up with was the formation of an Aryan international and the implied destruction or subjugation of Jewish power. He did not explicitly claim that Jewry as a race or species were to be eliminated tout court, or that the Jews should not be allowed to live or to live even amidst the non-Jewish elements. Rather, what he did say is that this is the only effective strategy, and that its function would be to coerce Jewry and their affiliates to heal and to cease and desist from their violent aggression. Hence we are left without any more explicitly articulated position on how the Jews are to be dealt with, let alone what their fate will be in relation to others. However, one can speculate or even prognosticate that given the chaotic history of Jewry, their bloody trek through the ages, there is only a limited set of solutions as the final outcome of the formation of an Aryan international, and that is either, 1, destruction, or 2, quarantine. In the case of the former, jury could be subjected to genocide by whatever appropriate means according to the laws of karma, and in the case of the latter, should not all Jews or even any be subject to extermination, they could be quarantined. If the latter were possible and jury could be rounded up and forced to leave by threat of the first option, as they certainly would not voluntarily leave, they would be relocated to a particular region of the earth and suffer their fate there. Further, this could occur in Palestine or what is now called the State of Israel, where they could be left to their own devices, that being certain death, or they could be removed to another location and left there to their own devices. Almost of a certainty, the Judeo-Christians would wish to assist them, but it would be necessary, after at most a preliminary gift by the Judeo-Christians of startup resources, that they be forced to remain completely isolated from all others and that no one may visit them or allow them to leave at any point. This would necessitate a military blockade and the privation of the Jews of all weaponry to attempt to completely neutralize their potentially threatening nature. However, even in spite of all precautions, the Jews, being steeped in black magic, would undoubtedly invoke their entities to create problems, harming others and empowering themselves as per their usual modus operandi. Hence perhaps the first option is the only solution to the Jewish question, that being the final solution. After all, is it not the case that their karma necessitates this fate given millennia of abuse, exploitation and genocide of others? White weakness, Aryan power. The problems of today's world can be traced directly to the problems inherent in the white mind. All other problems are simply enabled thereby, and this owing to the historically superlative power and capacity of whites, who have employed this capacity in such a way as to bring about the current conditions by act or omission. Throughout the history of the world, the devastation of empire and the ruination of all higher culture established in its origin by the Aryan race, nearly all can be traced to what the writer will herein label white weakness or white fallibility, the susceptibility of the white mind to reduce all higher aims and purposes to inferior levels of existence, and thus to drag down the projects, enterprises and actions of the white race to a state of decay, of unsustainability and degeneration. The writer designates by the term white the conventional constellation of ideas associated with this term, what the average man in the street would associate with it and with what it has been historically associated with, namely Caucasian, European, white people. He differentiates this term from that of the Aryan and the Aryan race, by which latter he means the white race elevated to a higher octave of spiritual being, a spiritually superior type that exists within and can only exist within the biological substrata of white, European people. The fallibility of the white mind is not possible in that of the Aryan, and this by virtue of his superior spiritual state, understanding life at a higher level of existence beyond both the animal mind of the Pashu beast man and the rational mind of the worldly functionary. Both beast men and the man of reason have their consciousness rooted in the lower planes of being, yet within the human, all too human reality of phenomenal causality, in the spatio-temporal consciousness, if such it may be called, completely lacking in any transcendent state of being. The following purports to constitute a synopsis of factors that are related to the mind of white fallibility. There may be countless others which apply, but these are the few which have occurred to the writer as of the time of this writing: gullibility, emotional reactivity, petty self-interest, pathological altruism, historical amnesia, excessive lenience, hedonism, decadence, hubris, hyper-individualism, solipsism, Saturnian consciousness. Gullibility is a significant factor of white people. By virtue of their Hyperborean origins, they have a consciousness which may be spoken of as not of this world, but rather having divine origins. Accordingly, they are not as savvy as the beast men, who are developed in accordance with their world in their having not been genetically engineered or interbred with whatever reptilian entities who created the Jews, or who are simply a miscegenated product of interbreeding, and this to varying degrees within the white population. Hence the non-white beast man has an animal cunning, and on this basis is of a worldly nature, restricted in his consciousness to the phenomenal world and seeking the satisfaction of his base drives. Whereas the white population, deriving from what might be called heaven, are detached from the world and on this basis lack the animal cunning of the beast man, and thus are not overly focused on the beast man's deceptions and manipulations. By virtue of the gullibility of the white race, the devious Jew has exploited the fallible white mind and introduced all manner of spookism into his consciousness, in the words of Ben Klassen. The various mind manipulative ideas of the Jew are inserted as so many viruses into the consciousness of the white by Jewry, and this as divisive means of dividing and conquering people against one another. The receptivity to these ideas and ideologies on the part of whites is a result of their higher consciousness, which, existing in worldly conditions and becoming immersed in them, may become tangled up in the letter of the law and not the spirit, and hence are led astray from truth, winding up amidst the weeds along the byways which deviate from its straight and narrow path. The ideologies are formulated by Jewry to contain truths which are agreeable to their targeted demographic and which contain all manner of other details in the fine print which are not in any way beneficial for white survival. The white mind becomes immersed in the details of these ideologies or various ideas which seem consistent with the initial truths, or which, prima facie on their surface appearance, appear true but are in reality simulacra. The receptivity of the white mind to such ideas is a result of a failure in its faculty of transcendence, which had become weaker through miscegenation subsequent to the fall of man from the spiritual planes and the diviers. Those susceptible to gullibility gravitate toward these ideologies as curiosities and dainties which they partake of as so many sweetmeats, eagerly gobbling up these intellectual and aesthetic dainties as a starveling at a feast gobbles victuals. The inevitable repercussions of such mental gluttony is a bellyache and diabetes of the mind, high of sugar sweet curiosities and conceptual novelty, leading to a subsequent low of intellectual deprivation once the novelty has been assimilated and the questing after more being the inevitable result of the insatiable desire consciousness. Not having a willingness to persevere in less amusing and curious investigation into verifying or disproving the ideology or idea initially partaken of out of a superficial curiosity, or over-eagerness to partake in novel experiences, the ideology's Jewry serves up as their sweetmeat fare are specifically tailored to render the mind always simultaneously bloated with these crazy ideas on the one hand and deprived of any very sound nourishment on the other. Here the Jew is like the witch in Hansel and Gretel, stuffing Hansel so full of sweets to fatten him up for the slaughter and to induce an intellectual high so that he will come to appreciate his life of slavery in the cage of the illusion matrix of Jewry until he, the Jew, decides it is time he was slaughtered. It is the mundane's inability to transcend his base-born condition of worldly care and desire, his inability to overcome his decision born of curiosity and a desire to attain or be something other than he is to partake of such poisoned apples of ideology, that brings about his first down-going. Hence it is a Saturnian consciousness of the mundane which renders them susceptible to seeking that which is other to himself, his tendency toward desire consciousness which chains him to the earth as an earthbound soul questing after purely worldly delights and pleasures. Hence, for the mundane properly so called, he has placed matter over spirit and allowed himself, or perhaps had insufficient capacity to resist, the gravity of his telluric consciousness. Gullibility is a function for the white mundane owing to his attachment to spirit to a degree, and paradoxically his detachment from spirit. In the first case he has an ineptitude in his engagement with the world, his divine origins lead him away from being an adept or worldly wise and cunning figure like the Jew and the beast man non-white. In the second case, that of his detachment from spirit and immersion within the mire of worldliness, he has insufficient self-control to elevate himself from the mire like Baron von Munchausen, extricating himself from the earthbound condition through his own willpower. He pursues curiosities, attempts to engage them and falls from grace owing to his incapacity to toe the line of the worldly. Gullibility thus is the Achilles heel of the white man. The ideological sweetmeats fired up by the Jew for the white man serve the function of leading him astray and away from his spiritual height, poisoning his system simultaneously and, over time, dragging him down to the depths of beast consciousness through triggering his desire nature or rendering him comatose through pseudo-spiritual offerings, theological and intellectual Gordian knots which serve to distract him from his enslavement and intended genocide. The outcome of the gullible white man partaking of the Jewish poisoned apples is observable in the religious fanatics of the nunneries and Dark Age with their self-abasement and self-flagellation. The New Age nostrums of pseudo-spiritual inebriation jury traffics in, and the hippie pacifists who partake of them are another example, with their self and other abusive passive aggression and self-extinction of any and all forms of strength and power, which latter were at least preserved in Christianism. Both New Age ideology and Piscean Dark Age Christianism are templates or mind programs which condition the consciousness to traverse paths of extinction amounting to death cults that terminate the life force of their adherents over time and transform them into the walking dead, or Zions, to use a term of Tim Rifot. These religions, especially those of Abrahamic ideology, create a crystallized consciousness rendering the adherent a Zion neurotic, inhibited and probably possessed by the angelic entities which are invoked through the religious conditioning process. This package of ideology is installed in the mind of the Zion as an egregoric software which amplifies a natural or essential tendency of the white population toward more of its weak points, viz., emotional reactivity, pathological altruism, excessive lenience, and hubris. Both ideological spheres overlap to a great degree like a Venn diagram, each sharing in many similar properties and serving largely the same purpose of jury, that being the innovation, enslavement and gradual replacement of whites under their hegemony, the gradualistically orchestrated merger with the host of the parasite in a process of symbiosis. With respect to emotional reactivity, both ideologies function to amplify the natural tendency of the mundane who, and this even in the case of whites and antagonism to their god mind and the essence of the Graal, to emotional reactivity, to react to stimuli, to dwell within the lower states of consciousness in the purely emotional level of existence, or at least to an excessive degree. Hence a lack of self-control through detachment from spiritual reality, from the higher planes of existence, is the result, a lack of ability to think clearly and distinctly, and the lack of an ability to obtain or maintain superconsciousness, the faculty of suprarational intuition or intellection as it was spoken of by the medieval scholastics. Emotion superseding reason or higher understanding leads downward to the transient world of spatio-temporal contingency and renders one susceptible to the mutability of emotionalism. The propensity on the part of the white mundane to react emotionally to circumstantial changes is a function of his detachment from the spiritual planes, of his attachment to desire and the confusion induced by the emotionally based nature of the Jewish ideologies. These ideologies are not necessarily designed in all cases with malice aforethought by Jews, but are in many cases a symptom of the Jewish consciousness embodying itself in a theological form. Much emotional pathos of the Magian Solus Spengler called it devotional ecstasy before the demiurge, and all manner of theatrical fables born of the visionary mind of the Semite. The consequence of such an ideology is a mind of a chaotic nature, one which has been subjected to the conditioning of what might be called Semitism, the pathos and hysteria of the Jewish type.